So hey everybody, welcome to this August edition of the Making Progress podcast. So my name is Chris Driver. I'm the editor of the Baptist Progress, and we're going to take us a little bit of time. We're going to break down the latest issue of the Baptist Progress, and we're not going to read it to you, but we are going to talk about it, guys. And so with me today, I have, as always, Heath Mitchell. He is our director of missions for the BMA of Texas. And he is our resident expert on all things BMA.
Oh, my goodness, so we're in trouble.
So welcome, Heath. And so today's special guest, we have Jason Collins. He's a pastor of Crossroads Church in Rowlett. And he is really the pastor of the church. Crossroads is our ministry focus this month. And so we're going to take a little time after this, maybe even, and talk about, do a little bit of a deep dive further into your article. But, man, we're glad to have you today. Yeah. How was the drive in?
Oh, drive was great. I mean, wasn't too big of a deal. I mean, coming from Dallas, I expected to hit a bunch of traffic. I have to say this. I didn't know until we started this, because you were sitting still the whole time, that you were in a rocking chair.
Yes.
And I just love that. It's like I'm sitting with my papaw.
Absolutely. I feel that way.
I mean, we're the same age. We're somewhere in that ballpark. But I'm just saying, I just love that. I looked over and you're just back and forth. And I was like, I was like sitting on the patio of a Cracker Barrel in here.
I thought about it when I first sat down and they got me this new chair here. And I thought, man, they didn't know what they were doing.
Well, you look very cozy.
I am a fidgeter, so this may be interesting.
You you guys were saying before the podcast, you guys have found Heath asleep in here several times.
Yeah, I think back and forth. He could be. Yeah. He's found a new secret place to hide. So we ever go looking for him. Bad thing is the door locks from the inside, so we can't even get in here.
Oh, wow.
There's no telling.
Perfect hideout.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I have to say this about driving in this place. I just drove from the hotel over here this morning. There was already 4 miles of backup traffic. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Every time I come over here, my question is this: why do you live here? Texas is a big state. You can live anywhere. Right. I mean, everybody lives on top of each other. But I mean, it is like, I don't know why people live here on purpose.
No, I thought it was going to be way worse, but it was not a big deal.
Well, I'm glad for that, man. Well, we're glad to have you this morning.
And so, thanks.
So, man, we're just going to jump right into it. So, Baptist Progress, August edition. And so really just want to look straight in to the disaster relief, man, that's happening in San Angelo.
Yeah.
Man, it is, it's a lot worse than a lot of people. So it's one of the things I've been talking with people, even this morning, a lot of people don't realize that there was even flooding in San Angelo. Mm. And so, but there was, talking with the guys down there, there was at least 12,000 homes that were impacted by the flood. And, I actually took a load of water up there the last few days and down there to them, and they're hurting. They're hurting, and so just the crumbs is there, and they have been feeding how many meals a day?
Yeah, I think it was. I think I'm hearing 250, 300 meals a day that they're feeding, and there is a bit of a local water crisis right now. So, man, last we heard, they're going through about a pallet of water a day. And give out as well.
Yeah, they said that the water in some of the wells that were there had tested positive for E. coli. And so, obviously, I mean, you can't even use it to wash your hands. I mean, they're bull notices, obviously. But with everything, a lot of them don't have electricity. I mean, there's just a lot of problems in some of these little subdivisions. And talking with LaVon Hayden, and just that the problem is that there's a lot of senior adults in some of these communities that are just not going to be able to get back into their homes very quickly.
And so
there's definitely a need going on down there, and they cried out. And the reason this made the cover this time is we published an article last month, but they're struggling. I mean, especially Grace Temple, which is one of our churches that's down there, really our only church in San Angelo. And Chris Sweet is the pastor there, and he's really making a plea for help because there's about 65 of them, and they've, for 5 weeks now, they've been serving 300 meals a day, and they're tired, and so they need some help, man.
Yeah, it's. And just doing disaster relief, like one of the things that I learned participating and being a recipient in both cases is a lot of people tend to, and this is human nature, but you move on based on the news cycle.
Absolutely.
But the people there, they're still living in it way beyond the news cycle.
Absolutely.
And it takes such a longer recovery. You said a couple of things that stood out to me. Like, I remember after Katrina and Rita, I went down as a disaster relief worker, and they put us in Gulfport in Long Beach, Mississippi. And people were like, why are you there? Well, that's actually where the storm hit. It was the levees breaking in New Orleans, and that got all the news.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, and it needed help and support as well. But we went initially to Gulfport and Long Beach and hit that area, which was not getting near the coverage at that time. And then at the same time, like 9 or 10 months later, we went back again, that time to go and do continued problems in the lower ninth ward of New Orleans. I mean, almost a year later, we're still out there like trying to deconstruct houses and getting people back in. So it, long past the news cycle, the need is persisting. And so, man, through prayer and help and giving and whatever else we can, I mean, churches and this is where it's a pet peeve of mine. You know, we often look for, and I'm grateful that the government has certain programs to do mm-hmm. stuff, but I think sometimes we lean on the government to do stuff the church is called to do. And
Absolutely.
So, I think churches need to go in to places like this. Make sure you do it the right way.
Yeah.
You've got to have some connections down there. Don't just
Absolutely.
Show up. But
show up.
But there's a lot of work that needs to get done, and they need people.
Yeah, and that's to that point. Just the Crumbs, you know, our BMA Disaster Relief, they plan on being there to the end of the year.
Mm.
And so they know that this is a long time because they're still mucking out houses. They're still, you know, they're spraying for anti-mold. That's the big thing right now is, you know, I mean, they're pulling out sheetrock, and they need crews to do that. They need, you know, a six-man crew, I think, right now is what they're looking for.
They need six volunteers every day to just to handle their feed lines, just food lines. Yes, all of, I mean, they can keep as many muck out crews as show up busy.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so they're in desperate need, and they are making that plea.
Yeah.
And I think that long-term need, it's going to be there for a while.
Yeah.
I mean,
and thank God for those guys showing up. I mean, like, praise God for them. Those people that are consistent and showing up. Like, there's this need, and we also have a God who loves to meet our need, and they're filling that gap in between.
Absolutely.
And so, man, thank all of you guys for serving and doing what you do.
Absolutely. And that's our call, right? Is to go and be that. And they've got some just really wonderful stories. So they're trying to pass out food, and you know, Chris was telling me about stories of being able to pray with the people as they come through,
right.
And you know, hearing answered prayers for new jobs and for, you know, getting back in their homes. And they even had one really cool story about a lady, and she was Japanese, didn't speak a lot of English, but she'd been there for about 5 years, and she hadn't really connected to the community a lot, but somebody had actually taken one of their free meals and sold it to her for $5. Well, she calls because the number for the church was on there, and so she calls to say, hey, can I get another one of those $5 meals? They were really good. And they're like, $5 meals? What are you talking about, $5 meals? And they're like, we give them for free. Well, I paid $5 for it. Well, the church, one of the volunteers, took her another meal the next day and $5. And it's like you're not paying for our meal. And so I love that about that. And so she came back up, and like I say, didn't speak English well, but she came back up and she brought a note and just said, you know, I've never been treated, you know, this well in the 5 years that I've been here. And so I think that's just those stories that God's able to do, you know, in the middle of brokenness and, you know, things that are going wrong that, you know, when people show up. And that's the hard part, is just the showing up. And so I think that's their desire, and that's their heart, is could, you know, and I'll tell you, when we took the water down there, a bunch of the people from Grace Temple, they came in and they helped us unload the water, and they were just tired. But I tell you what, for them to see another church physically show up,
right,
it was such a big thing for them. And so I know now, I mean, they definitely need to see some faces. They need to see some faces.
Good.
Well, I I'm noticing a lot of muck out crews and all are showing up from from way away, from other states and all. But Chris, you in the article, I mean, this is we're BMF Texas. This is the Texas paper, and I loved your challenge, Texans helping Texans.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And for a lot of our churches, this rhythm has to be built.
Yeah.
We're not used to responding
Absolutely.
In this way to really caring from one another. Right now, I'm neck deep in some BMA of Texas history, and this is our history. BMAF Texas churches were down working the Galveston disaster of 1900. Mm-hmm. They have walked beside BMA communities through famines in the past and all kinds of things. And man, I don't know. I think we might have lost touch with just the benevolence piece of helping each other and our communities through disaster. And I do think this is something that we want to pay attention to.
Yeah, we're so used to in our Christian faith now being almost voyeuristic in how we consume our faith. It's like we see it through a screen.
Yeah.
But we are called to go. That is the Great Commission. And going means a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what you can do when you serve people. Like, one of the things we say at our church all the time is like, people start to understand how much they matter to God when they see how much they matter to us. And to something you said earlier, you were like, it's hard to go. It is, but it's also not. Mm-hmm. Like, if we could just, all of us need to be challenged in this. I think we do what we want to do.
We
live in a culture, we do what we want to do. Like, I can say, well, I'm too busy, but the way that I've said it in our church several times is I can tell you my week is completely packed, my weekend is completely booked. If you show up at my church and go, you know, Jason, I got 50-yard tickets to the Cowboy game, it's crazy how much I can free up my schedule when I want to do something. Mm-hmm. So, like, sometimes it comes down to, like, the want to go be a part of this. And As hard as it can be, the reward for being present in the middle of what God is doing is infinitely better than anything else you're going to get. So,
and it's presence good matters. Presence matters. I mean, you can, and you see this even to your article. I mean, kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but you know that you know you can't impassion people by just writing checks.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's while the money is good and sending money to, you know, to the disaster relief is important and they need that to keep these things going. But
sure.
But your presence, I mean, it matters. It's a big deal. And, yeah. And man, just seeing them when we came, you know, just somebody showing up, because we'd had that thought as we drove by, we're like, man, we should have picked this up in, you know, Big Spring, or we could have, you know, and I thought they were going to be out of water everywhere, but we walked into a convenience store and they had pallets of water in a convenience store. And I thought, man, we could have just sent money. But when you show up and your presence shows up and they see faces, you know, coming to them, it's different. You know, money is important, but man, your presence right now in particular, I mean, you know, the people of Grace Temple, you know, just the Crumbs crew there, they need to see some presence. And I hope that our people will maybe see this, respond to that.
Yeah,
and I hope so too. Show up. So yeah. Anyway, but yeah, so that moves us on. So, missions. So let's talk missions, man. We are a Baptist Missionary Association, so missions is pretty important to us. And so we do happen to have the missions director.
What a coincidence.
What a coincidence.
I know.
That we can, I bet he can say something a little bit about missions. What do you got to go? What's going on in missions, man?
Well, exciting news this month is man, we've got five churches at one time that are coming off of mission status at the same time. Each of them organized churches. But man, I just the challenge. I've spoken to it many times when other churches have come off, but just the, you know, they're always nervous. It is a scary time
sure.
for a church that has for 5 years received, you know, significant support and help, and they're taking just those first, you know, really infant steps into just self-sustaining. You know, they've prepared for it in each of these cases. I mean, I'll say I believe in Christ, they're ready for it, but it is so scary. It really is. And it's also such a moment, and we do try to celebrate it. And I encourage every time, and I want to encourage this time, for churches to encourage them in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Celebrate with them, maybe send them a letter of encouragement, a letter of congratulations, because the amount of just work and faith exercise that has led, you know, to them being at this point. So, you know, this month, Lighthouse of Hope, a work among Nigerians in the Katy area, is stepping into self-support. Iglesia Bautista Gracia Soberana, which is Sovereign Grace Baptist Church in Kyle, Texas. This church is stepping into self-support. It's a Spanish-speaking congregation there in Kyle. Harmony Baptist Church of Normandy. This is a replant we've walked beside for some years, and really have helped this church. I mean, they have reorganized and rebuilt, and they're stepping into self-support. Iglesia Bautista Hispana Conroe, which is Conroe Hispanic Baptist Church in Conroe, beside Northside Baptist there. They're stepping into self-support, working on a new building right now at the same time. I didn't mention, but Lighthouse of Hope also just into a brand new building. And so really taking on that rent while taking on other expenses at the same time. And then also Anchor Austin Church, which is a church in the Georgetown, North Austin area, reaching people from India. This church is stepping into self-support. So I know you will pray for, and I encourage you to encourage these churches in this exciting time. What an exciting time for the mission department too. Mm-hmm. To see we've reached a stage where so many churches that we've been walking beside for years are reaching these stages. And we just really celebrate that, and we're celebrating it with them. Thankful you've seen these churches join the BMA of Texas and participate beside you. So that is very exciting.
You know what's fun looking at that? I mean, I didn't recognize it as we were talking about it, but four of those are Hispanic or international. I mean, four out of the five.
That's true.
And so, I mean, that's pretty exciting. I mean, for us, because I mean, we always talk all the time that literally, you know, the world is coming to Texas. I mean, you know, we have an international mission field in Texas, and we're doing a good job, I think, of really reaching those and serving that community, and to see those things come.
It's amazing how God just brings those opportunities our way, and it's exciting to see what He's done with it. Truly,
and I think it's special prayer. I mean, and we know, you know, not to be political and all, especially for our Hispanic brothers and sisters. You know, our Hispanic planters are really facing, you know, with all the things that are happening and the ICE and the deportations and things like that. It's a really fearful time, you know, for a lot of their people. And so their ministry is looking really different right now. And,
sure is.
You know, people scared to gather, and, you know, how you reach those, you know, it's really different. And we see that come through a lot from our guys that, you know, that's a real prayer request. And we don't often think about that in terms of, you know, all the politics that go on, but that does directly impact, you know, the gospel sharing from our guys in this state in a very real way. And so, I mean, it's something we need to definitely continue to pray for them about as they walk that, navigate that. I mean, it's a different time for sure for those. And so
you'll notice in the progress that Anchor Austin, their whole church gathered and helped a family in the Georgetown area who were affected by the floods. The floods were much more isolated in the Georgetown area, not as widespread, but they were connected to a family and a farm there in their church. Their church really rallied and helped that family. Pictures in the progress of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Jason, y'all have, I mean, actually, you know, Crossroads is actually one of our church plants from
93, 94.
So for just a minute, I mean, how do you think that impacts y'all's DNA? I mean, and who you are as a church now, do you think that had an impact that, you know, in your recent history, it's been that?
Well, it certainly had an impact. I mean, there's a, literally where we are as a church physically would not, I just don't think there's any other way we would have been there where we are at 7900 Chisa, which is a really amazing place, if it had not been for the BMA of Texas, because it was the association first that purchased that property. And so everything that we've built on that, every ministry we've done, every time people show up in that place, I mean, that is a part of the legacy of the generosity of the BMA. And so that part is really huge for us. And those early formative years, they are hard. But for me, there's two things that excite me about this. One, I love seeing churches come off support. I know it's hard. I know it's challenging. Listen, when I got to Crossroads, we showed up and there was a mountain of debt that was owed, that we were still making payments to the BMA for the property we were on, all those kind of things. And so there was a lot of support that came there, but there is something really good. I think in a lot of churches, we fail to tell our church some of the realities of the challenges that we face. And sometimes those realities are just financial, and we're so reluctant to talk about those things in a lot of local churches. Yeah. But people in your local churches, guess what? They're aware that things cost money. Mm-hmm. They know that you have to pay bills. They know that there's expense. And so the way that I tend to think about it is, I think most churches want to help you overcome those obstacles. I think the people in your church are committed to it. They want to help you be off support. They want to help contribute, but they can't help you solve a problem that you don't tell them exists.
That's good.
And so, like, being able to tell them, like, here's where our challenge is, but that's also this incredible step of faith to be like, we've had this dependency on our association, and praise God for that. But coming off that, we get this, this place where we get to step into this place of really trusting God and trusting the folks in the local church to support the local church with their, which there's a biblical mandate for. And so that's huge. The other thing that excites me about this is my favorite part of the BMA of Texas, is the church planting movement. I don't know if y'all have seen the most recent things that come out, but, like, I mean, right now the research shows that in the United States there'd be about 15,000 churches that'll close in 2025. Another 15,000 approximately that will no longer be able to pay a full-time or bivocational pastor. And we're not planting at near the rate to fix that. And we don't need... we need more healthy churches. We don't need less churches. We need more and more healthy churches. Yeah. And so being able to be a part of an association that is actively planting, it's hard. There are challenges to it. But, man, that's what it means to be the church. Like, in this world, you will have trouble. But we also have the promise that we can take heart because He has overcome the world. And so, living in that reality, which I think is so much of what it means to be a planter or to replant or to whatever, all those new words that we have associated with this, it's like all of them mean the same thing. How do I create more healthy churches?
Absolutely.
And that's what's exciting to me. So I'm excited for these next steps for these church planters.
Yes.
We walked through those moments of getting debt free back in 2015 to be able to take steps into ministry. And we challenged our people in it. And, man, they showed up and continue to have for 10 years. So it's been awesome.
Well, and a beautiful new stage. Methods are always changing, you know. But fortunately, none of these, not one of these churches are entering this stage with any debt.
That's awesome.
And so we praise the Lord for that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah.
I wanted to mention, thank goodness, let me go blank on his name, Tim Alba.
Yeah.
Tim, church planted out of Crossroads. He comes from you guys.
Yeah.
And, man, a highlight for him this month, they're baptizing 6 people.
I read that. That was really cool. I'm super proud of Tim. He came through Crossroads and did residency there during 2020, which was a really complicated time to try to do anything.
Wow.
Always very exciting to see how God's using them and growing their church. And I read that in the report, and I was just pumped for Tim. So that's good stuff.
Man, that church is sharing the gospel.
Absolutely.
And really this year seeing such growth.
Yeah, love it.
And so excited for them. One other I would want to mention, because I just thought this was a cool story. Jose Torres over in Tyler, Texas. They launched a new small group this month, a new house group, and they launched it out of the house of someone that they just baptized this month.
Mm.
And the result of that, of course, is this new believer has all of these unsafe friends. So, all of these unsafe people that are now being invited into this house group and are learning of the gospel. And isn't that beautiful? They say we never know more lost people
than
we do when we first come to Christ.
Yeah.
You know,
Heath, are you saying that you can immediately begin to serve Jesus after you become a believer?
Oh, yes.
Okay. I just say that because I think a lot of times people tend to delay that process.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, man, they're like, I don't know enough. Well, share what you do know. I mean,
absolutely.
We accidentally build processes that put people on a shelf sometimes.
Yeah.
Until they know more and are equipped better. But yes, man, the biblical model is we don't have to know more than let me tell you what Jesus has done
That's
for me,
exactly
what
right.
he's done in my life.
Yeah, the word immediately appears an awful lot in the New Testament.
It sure does.
It does that. It's cool to see Jose practicing that and real results coming from it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Woman at the well, what did she know?
Yeah.
She knew I met a dude named Jesus and he changed my life and hey, you need to know him.
Which, what a crazy story.
Yeah.
Company to man who told me everything I've ever done. If I met somebody who could tell you everything I've ever done, I don't know that I'd want to introduce you to them.
I don't know either.
But she there was something about the grace of Jesus that overcome all of her past that she wanted even the people who had probably ostracized her to know what this Jesus. And it was
changes
a great story.
Your life. And I mean, that is really the essence of what we need to do and help what people do. It's just, and you have a great story. Tell it. You know, Jesus has changed your life.
Heck
go
yeah,
tell
man.
It. You know everything you need to know. Go do it. We'll work on some of the other stuff, but
get it.
All right. So TBHC, you know, our Texas Baptist Home for Children. Love always talking about them and the ministry that they have there. And you know, what's cool in this month's article, Jason's sharing about a team that they sent over to Moldova, and you know, to do what they're doing there and to minister to the women and the families there in particular. And so I think it's pretty cool that they didn't just keep it local, that they're actually having.
They're a couple of years into this partnership, and they're sending teams that, man, they're just loving on kids in care in Moldova. I know they're doing day camps and just loving on parents and just connecting with the ministries there and doing all kinds of things. And it sounds like the team was very impacted this year, and I know and trust that they made a kingdom difference in the country of. In the country of Moldova.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, praise God for that.
Yeah. Well, to that, we know that TBHC in particular, you know, their heart for adoption, you know, things have changed, you know, in the state of Texas as far as how we can do that, how the home has been able to even practice. And so, you know, the group home thing is out the door. We can't do that anymore. Yeah. And so now the emphasis is so heavily on needing and desperately needing foster families, people willing to step up. And I know Jason speaks of that often, and that's just his heart. I mean, they've done it and they've seen, you know, been a part of actually adopting. And so I know... but I know you as well. You have a history. You and your family have a history of foster care.
Yeah, this is something Jason Curry and I've connected on many times because that's and we've hosted TBHC at our church for trainings and things like that. First of all, there is no easy path for foster parenting.
Yeah.
The idea of getting into that and going like, oh man, this is going to be just a piece of cake is just not an option. There are so many. Requirements of foster families and everything. And I say all this, it sounds like a discouragement to get into it. But like ministry is not about finding the path of least resistance. Like the ministry is about identifying like, where does God need me? Like one of the things that people, one of the things that people would say to like my wife and I every once in a while is they'll go, oh, I could never foster. It would just be too painful when they have to leave. And there's this weird part of us go, do you think it's easy for us? Like we're heartless people, so like it's easier for us to be foster parents.
That's what.
And the truth is, you go, I'm going to embrace the pain. Like, I mean, like that's so much of what gospel ministry is. Like you're willing to embrace the pain that is needed in order to meet the need. Yes. It's Jesus is the perfect example of that with the cross. Like, he embraced the pain of our sin so that he could meet the need that we desperately needed. And that's so much what foster care is. And so there is infinite amount of reports and things that you have to fill out and notes and all these things. And you get kids who, I mean, there's not a lot of kids in foster care that things are going, I mean, there's a reason they're there. Like things are not going great. But we've had 14 kids in our home and everyone has been a unique blessing, a unique challenge, but an unbelievable blessing. And we're still connected to several of the kids that have been in our home, and we've watched them. We've watched some of them come to know the Lord. We've watched them grow up in homes where they have been loved incredibly well. We've watched them reconnect in some cases with family that God has radically transformed their families and their homes. And we got to stand in the gap in that place. And so I wish more people would do that.
Yeah.
I was the holdout in my marriage. Mm-hmm. Crystal wanted to do it much earlier than I did. And I was like, we're too busy. Look at our life and our home. And you know, how do we do this? And how do we do that? And the truth was, we do what we want to do. Like I could come up with every excuse in the world not to do it. And then God finally pinned me down one day and was like, where's your yes? Like, where's this? Like we surrendered life. When did my preferences no longer become the obstacle?
Yeah.
And so we said yes. And I'm so grateful that we did. And it transformed my kids, my biological kids, we started watching kids when they were younger, and they've gone through young adulthood in many cases, all the way up into adulthood, watching that play out. And my kids, I think, live on mission more because we were on a 24/7 mission trip constantly.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Well, and I think sometimes we think, you know, when we think of foster, that we all want the ultimate best result for that, you know, to pull them out, and then ultimately they find the best, you know, adoption or whatever it might be, the best homes. And, you know, but I understand also, you know, having been part of this in different ways, that moment is so critical. I mean, whatever moment you have with them, that fostering moment, it may not end up in the, but for that kid, that moment could be the difference in their life, of that they have a moment where they get a glimpse of something different, you know, where life doesn't have to be what I've always experienced. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, as foster parents, you don't get to control the outcome.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yes, you're right. For whatever time they're there, that kid gets to be exposed to some really great things. They get to know that they're loved, that somebody cares, and
there's a God that loves them.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, you know, that is the opportunity that you give, is that, you know, they don't have to be a statistic, that there is another option. You know, I mean, I wish they all chose to do that. We don't control the results. All we can do is just be that, stand in the gap, give them a glimpse of, you know, God's love for them, you know, and a healthy family, and what God desires for them, and to recognize that their life doesn't have to go down that same road that's been, for many of them, just a cycle. Yes. You know, again, like you say, most of them aren't coming out of great opportunities. It's, you know, it's brokenness that they're coming out of.
So once a year as a church, we do a special Sunday where we talk just about this.
Yes.
And we've had TBHC and other agencies that have been in our welcome area, so we can go, like, we're going to remove as many barriers as possible. We're going to make this as easy as possible to get started. Like, walk out of the service right now, go talk to an agency, go talk to Jason and his team, go connect with them, and jump into this, at least begin to get some information. Because as the people of God, I mean, historically, foster care exists because of Christians. Many other things that get framed as like social organizations, they really started as Christian ministries. Yeah. And foster care is a huge part of that. I hope more families will do that, not because it's easy, but because it's worth it.
Absolutely.
And whole churches get to be involved in foster. When even one family in the church is willing to foster, then everyone gets to love on that family, support those parents in their fostering, provide things like rest and days off to just supply needs, and, you know, but it becomes everybody. And it really struck me this year as TBHC is moving into direct ministry in all of our churches, that our churches already have this in existence. Because, man, show me the church that doesn't already have grandparents who have grandchildren placed with them, and these are fostering.
Yep.
And with no support, with no care. And man, for our churches to come beside TBHC and learn to properly care for them and help them on this journey,
that's good.
Would also be just so beneficial.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I love that. And it's definitely there. There. Well, Jacksonville College, man, always cool to talk about them. And they are in the middle of change. And
that's right.
And, you know, Dr. Erickson's article this month was about leaving legacy. And that's one thing I've always appreciated about listening to guys that have been there. And I didn't grow up in the BMA. I didn't grow up in church. I was one heathen. But but anyway, I got here as soon as I could. But to hear you guys with that story of the impact Jacksonville College has had on you and your life and ministry, you know, there's a lot of that. And I think that's where we find Jacksonville College coming back to is this idea of, or this, hopefully, this plan for legacy, lifelong legacy. But they're talking about renovations, man. It's important, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and just change.
To see the positive improvement there right now. Just there's years of delayed maintenance, and seeing so much of that come together with all of the dormitories to this point, just seeing remodel and significant remodel, not just not just paint, but new roofs, new air conditioners, and real meat remodel to see that. Again, the dormitories, you know, are in so much better shape. The Weatherby building, the old library, a building that was originally built for the BMA Seminary when it was a BMA of Texas ministry on campus there. Beautiful, beautiful older building that has just been completely modernized. And then now the chapel, everyone has been contributing and helping get the chapel restored and back into shape. And excitedly, September 22nd, 11 a.m., the grand rededication of the chapel building at Jacksonville College. And to see not only just the buildings in better shape, but to know that the new four-year Bible degree has launched and is underway, to know that the hard-worked-on internship program that allows a student who can't afford to come to really just work their way and learn their way in ministry beside churches while they're getting their education there at Jacksonville College. It is an exciting time. It's an exciting time for the BMA of Texas and Jacksonville College.
Well, you know, we all know, I mean, and, you know, if you have any history in churches, you know, remodels or, you know, new building programs, they have a way of kind of building momentum. I mean, because you see change, you know, so you know things are happening. We know all of the, you know, the things, logistics behind the scenes are happening. There's a lot of change happening at Jacksonville. But when you begin to see, you know, physical change, physical updates, you know, you begin to see things begin to take new form and freshness. I think it has a way of really just kind of building excitement and kind of building its own momentum. You guys got a little remodel going on too.
Yeah, we do. What I love about this story is, you know, as people, as Christians, we constantly are challenged to raise up the next generation of leaders. Like, we're not here forever. Like, that's just like, The gospel is passed like a virus. Like, it's one person to another, like over and over again. And we have to pass that generation by generation. And we've been entrusted by God to do that. And so we have to raise up those next people, because God not only wants to use them now, He wants to use them more and more as they gain that wisdom and maturity that comes from getting like a Bible education and those types of things. And then renovation for me, like, and this is the same thing for Jacksonville College, is It's great to have nicer facilities. That's a blessing, but it's really just about expanding the tools that God's given you.
Absolutely, like being
this, good steward. It's not the answer to a problem. It's just a tool to use.
It's one of the
and so you've got a very necessary tool to equip the next generation, to equip people for ministry, to get more people to be educated, to understand the Bible. We live in a biblically illiterate generation. And so to get more people to understand the gospel that we've been entrusted to share with people, that's what is huge to me about this. So having the right tools to do the job is really important. And so I'm grateful that they're getting a chance to use those.
It'll make a difference. There's no doubt. I mean, it's...
And just to remind everybody, TBHC and Jacksonville College both are in such a season of change, with TBHC opening regional offices all over and moving their ministry right into local churches. You know, the tool up for that, and then all of the changes that Jacksonville College is currently making, we can't forget these two ministries. They need us more than ever in this season. And in this story, Brenda Bateman donated funds and rallied and really made one of those renovations possible. Brother Dwayne Turner, man, love that man, gone on to heaven now, but left money that led to the renovation of another one of those buildings. It's so exciting to see.
Yeah. And I think of, you know, if you think of legacy and those people that are leaving those things, and you know that you want it to outlive yourself, right?
I mean, absolutely.
You know, you want your life to live past you, right? Your impact to go on beyond yourself. And I think those are, like you say, investing in something that's going to train up, you know, new believers, new leaders, pastors, hopefully. I mean, and getting back to that, and we're starting to see more and more in this generation in particular, where we're, you know, for a while in my early ministry, I didn't see a lot of, you know, young men surrendering to ministry. And so we're kind of reaping the terrible rewards of that right now, and struggle to find pastors and, you know, qualified elders for things that, you know, we weren't doing doing a good job, or for whatever reason, we weren't seeing that for a long time. And,
yeah.
And so to see this resurgence beginning to happening on all our campuses and camps, I mean, you're just seeing God doing work in this younger generation. And so so to be ready for that, to prepare for that, to be a good steward over what God has given us and entrusted to us in Jacksonville College, man, I just really commend you know, Dr. Erickson in that, in the direction that he's taken. I mean, because he's really moved it forward in the last couple of years. I mean, it's just the change is so big and so evident.
And praise God for people like that who are willing to invest. Like, it's so easy, and we live we seem to be hyper aware of like generational differences now. Like we're so aware of what are the boomers or the millennials or the Gen Xers, like what do they think about? And we get hyper focused on the differences in those generations. I love that there are older generations who see Gen Z, Gen Alpha, and go, we see the differences, but we see the opportunities. Absolutely. And we want to invest in that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, every generation needs an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, and they're going to do it. I mean, it's going to go on. We know the gospel is going to go on.
Yeah.
And this next generation, somebody's going to take up the mantle. It's gonna, until Christ comes, this is going to keep moving forward. You know, nobody's going to stop the church.
That's right.
And so,
that's right.
You know, what does it do? How can we help them? You know, I think that's our goal and our challenge is, how do we help the next generation be faithful in that and prepare them for that? And I think they're doing a great job for that. So,
sure.
All right, so it brings us to our ministry focus of ministry spotlight article of the month, and that is Crossroads Church. And really enjoyed just sitting down, you know, just we kind of did it over the phone, but just getting to listen to you and tell your story. And, you know, so walk us through. Can I just really just kind of tell us a little bit about you know, the beginning, and then really, I think for me, kind of the focus is my original title for the article was, you know, We'll Take It. And that really stood out to me, because when you said that was how kind of this whole launch started was you know, finding something and saying, we'll take it.
A while ago, you were talking about the hard yeses when it come to foster care, and that just struck me today. Man, we're not to take the easy road, and it's hard yeses. You know, it's yes, that means suffering. Yes, that means hardship. Mm-hmm. And I have watched, man, for 10 years, your church just say yes time and time again.
Which I'm super grateful for. It's easy. Like if you were stepped into the church today, you would be like, well, yeah, of course, some of this is easier for them. You know, that they're bigger, they do this. But like, that's like walking into a movie 75% of the way through the film and being like, oh, they got this figured out already. That's not how the movie started.
Absolutely.
Like when I came there, and Crossroads was led by wonderful pastors and leaders before I ever got there. And so some of the DNA of this was embedded.
Yes.
But just like for any church, I think what had happened at Crossroads, and at least what I perceived, is that they went through a really difficult season. And in that difficult season, it's easy to lose focus on, like, why are we here? Mm-hmm. And when things start to struggle, self-preservation can start to become a focus over mission, legacy, impact. And they had every reason to claim a difficult season. Like, the church had gone through the loss of the pastor, but not just the loss of a pastor, the loss of a beloved pastor at the age of 49 who died of a heart attack in the parking lot of the church. So while serving the church, and that put the church into deep mourning and grief and all this kind of stuff. And so there's a legitimate reason that the focus shifted, and it really shifted to, how do we keep this thing afloat? Mm-hmm. And by the time I got there, I mean, I would drive around. Now, inside the walls of the church, man, I've never met, even back in the first days, never met a more welcoming, hospitable group of people. They would love you incredibly well once you got in the door. But then if I went around town and I asked, like, hey, you know, at that point, the church had been there for 20 years, 20 plus years. And I would say, like, hey, where's Crossroads? I asked that question a lot in my first few weeks. I was just curious to see what people would say. I didn't meet one person that knew that it existed. And it just told me that we had gotten through a season where we weren't known in our community. And part of the reason that churches go into, I mean, like, we are called as churches to go into homes, cities, places, and make them better by bringing the gospel of Jesus Christ into the darkness of the world. And it's easy to lose your way. Like, I mean, you read this, the story of the churches in Revelation, chapter 2 and chapter 3, yeah. There's seven churches. Six of them had gone off the rails. I doubt they ever had a business meeting where they went, how do we run this thing into the ground? Right. You know, like, stuff happened, and mm-hmm. you can shift. And as the church, if we don't constantly refocus, then it's easy to drift from what God's called us to. And so early in those days, I say, like, we want to be missional. And there were several things that happened that helped us be that. Weirdly, one of the greatest blessings for the life of Crossroads. It didn't feel like a blessing, but we had a tornado come through Rowlett in 2015. I was there less than 6 months. I was talking a lot about being missional, getting outside the walls of our church, finding these people that are inside the walls of their homes. And next thing you know, like, the walls of those homes were gone.
Wow.
And we were meeting people face to face in our community that hadn't existed. I've shared this with at a BMA conference once. Like, I called it the my favorite message that I never preached. Like, I put it on a shelf because I was prepared at the beginning of that 2016 to preach a passionate message about getting outside the walls of our church and being on mission. But after that tornado, the church collectively was like, we get it. And that began to shift things. So we kind of had a felt need, but then we were like, okay, how do we get more involved? How do we get more ingrained? We're still a small church. We had, our only resource was people. Like, if somebody was like, I need money, we were like, we have none. So we can just bring people. How can we serve? And so we were looking for opportunities. So we started making phone calls. We just started going, okay, let's call schools. And the schools didn't know what to do with this at that time. They were like, I'm not even sure who to transfer you to find out if you can help. Called the city. Same thing. So finally, I kept calling the city. They kept sending me to different departments. I finally got a hold of a lady named Elise Bowers, and Elise and I hit it off. And she was like, she wasn't over it. There was nobody over. Like, how do you engage? They were so used to, like, well, yeah, we have to create a new department and get taxpayer funding in order to get something accomplished. And they were like, we had no way of knowing, how do we engage somebody who just wants to volunteer to serve in their community? And so she helped me. I just told her, and this is part of what we wrote about in the article, I was like, just give us anything. Tell me the thing nobody wants to do. And we had just had the storm, there was this huge ditch outside of a neighborhood that nobody wanted to get in. Public Works didn't want to get down in there. There was no way to reach that. It's a really deep ditch. And there was a neighborhood community that was predominantly older. They're like, we can't get down in there and clean out this thing. So what do we do? And they were like, well, there's this ditch. And I go, we'll take that. Like, that's the thing. So we sent probably 100, 125 people one Sunday morning during church to the ditch. The neighborhood came out. They saw our church cleaning. They were all wearing matching shirts. People were stopping by the road, like, who is doing this? And the neighborhood people were bringing coffee and donuts to, like, serve our team. They were just so thrilled that somebody was doing something. Well, that initiated our relationship with the city. And they were like, okay, maybe what's something else we can do to partner with them. Now it's a pretty regular thing. We get emails, we get a phone call from our city all the time, like, hey, here's a need we can't meet. Can you guys help? School was the same way. The schools were so used to churches saying they would do something and then either doing it kind of in an underwhelming way or not doing it at all. And so we were like, just give us anything that we can do. And a lady named Lakeisha Culpepper, who was an elementary school principal, and this is how she and I connected. She and her family are members of our church today. They've been actively serving with us for a very long time now. But she was like, I have a couple of needs if you want to do these. And we were like, okay, we'll do that. Like, we'll take that. And so we started doing those things. And, you know, one of the questions that, and I've said this to our church a million times, that we constantly ask in the church world is, you go to like a conference or whatever, and you go, how's your church doing? Mm-hmm. And with all due respect, that may be the wrong question to ask. The right question is, how's your city doing?
Yeah.
Because if the church's job is to impact the community it's planted in, we need to look at how the city is doing as a result of that church being there. Yeah. There's too many churches, and this I preach this message to our church, if we vanished, would anything be missed?
Yeah.
And I wanted it to be, and not just me, I'd say our church, the heart of our church became, if Crossroads disappeared, that our community was going, how are we going to do this now?
Yeah,
that's because good. That's how ingrained we wanted to be. And that's really kind of how things started for us.
Yeah.
And then it has blown up into so much missional stuff that we've gotten to do all around the world. And God, you know, I think just like any area of stewardship, if you steward something well, God mm-hmm. has a way of bringing more needs and Absolutely. More resources to sure you. Does. And we've experienced that a lot.
Man, that is a great story. And I've heard that before, you know, that question of, you know, if your church disappeared tomorrow or closed tomorrow, would the city even know, would
right.
your town or community even know that it was gone? And,
yeah.
you know, sadly, I think most churches, I mean, it's probably not that way. But what I loved about your article, your conversation together and your story there is just how connected. I mean, and that's why I wanted to share y'all's story. Not that it's yeah. not a church growth story. That's
sure.
not what it's about. I mean, it's not, you know, I mean, you guys are running 1,200 or whatever, but that's not what the article is about. That's not why you're featured. The feature is that you're so deeply connected to that community. I don't know of another church that has the intimate relationship with the people of the community that y'all have. I've just seen and heard and, you know, your story, and I follow yeah. it all the time, about how you're so intimately connected, and not yeah. just you. I mean, and that's one of the things I asked yeah. you was it what your passion that drives this, or was it the people's? And, you know, to that, what yeah. would you say?
I mean, I think I helped give voice to yeah. something that was there. There was a current of it there, and there were people that longed to serve. Like I said, when you walked in the doors, they were serving people great, but this concept of like, oh, we can take that strength and put it in other places,
yeah.
that began to be a whole different thing. And yeah. and I think once they saw that, people who were leading in the church became people who were leading outside the church mm. For the gospel, and that it's just very transformative. Like, and one of the things that we say all the time is we'll never disconnect the ministry from the mission. So like, whatever we go do, we're going to come pray for you.
Absolutely.
We're going to share the gospel with you.
Yes.
We're not just going to come do this thing. We want to make sure, you know, we're there because Jesus sent us there.
That's it.
And that's a big component of, I think, this. And you mentioned church growth, and that's been one of the interesting things as we've grown. We constantly get that question. It's like, what was your church growth strategy?
Yeah.
And they're always surprised when we go, we didn't really have one. We still don't really have yeah. a church growth strategy. We don't spend any money on marketing. We
yeah.
don't do any of that. And I'm not anti those things, but we don't do that. Our oh. people get excited that God's using them.
Absolutely.
And they want to tell people
yes.
about it. If you are a spectator in something, you don't have a strong motivation to tell somebody else to join you as a spectator.
Absolutely.
If you're a participant, you've got a strong motivation to want other people to come alongside you and be a part of the team.
Yes.
Jason, most Christians in churches are servant gifted. There's
yeah.
more of those than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And in most churches, there's not enough opportunities to go around, because most churches, when they look for opportunities to serve, they're looking inside the walls
yeah.
among the services.
Yeah.
And if, you know, and they'll complain that a few people are doing everything, but truthfully, most Christians don't understand that you know, that there is ministry available to them outside the walls
yes.
of the church. And so these stories you're telling are of your people serving the Lord through Crossroads Church.
Yeah.
Outside the walls of the church.
Yeah.
I want to ask, what percentage do you think of the service at Crossroads is outside of your Sunday services in your church building?
Well, first of all, let me say this. I mean, nobody loved the church more than Jesus did. He gave his life for it. And yet most of the ministry opportunities we see Jesus engage in are outside the walls
yes.
of the traditional church.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a deep love we have for the local church and meeting its needs.
Yes.
But the church exists to be a benefit to the world around it.
Yes.
Like, that's what we're there for.
Yeah.
In terms of our ministry, I would say, gosh, I mean, like, so for example, we do two huge initiatives every year called the Big Give and Serve Day. We do stuff all year long, but these are ones at Christmas, ones usually in the springtime. And of all the things we do, which usually are somewhere between 30 and 40 projects and hundreds of thousands of dollars of resources, probably 85% of that is outside the walls of Crossroads.
So. Yeah.
Like, they're not, it's not membership,
yeah.
it's not any of those things, it's meeting needs outside. Of people who, many of them have never stepped foot into Crossroads.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of them have since, but it was
sure.
not a prerequisite for serving them.
Yes.
It's no different. I mean, Jesus goes to, I mean, to the woman at the well, to all these, to all these different people he engaged with. They're the outsiders, mm-hmm. and he loved them well, and the outsiders became insiders.
Yep.
And those insiders then had another passion to go reach more outsiders.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I love about the way the church works and the way God really wired the church to work.
Absolutely designed it to.
Yeah, so we've tried to create and cultivate lots of leadership opportunities. And then even inside the church, we're so used to that being handled by a couple of people. Mm-hmm. We try to hand off those platforms and those opportunities to people. We equip them, but we try to hand off stuff as often as possible inside too.
Yeah.
So that people are doing things where they feel like they're doing, they're not doing just menial tasks, mm-hmm. although sometimes that stuff needs to get done. They're doing some legitimate serving inside the church, which gives them confidence outside the church.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you balance this so well, and it's part of what makes so effective. You guys are serving, but the gospel is forefront.
Absolutely. Right.
You know, that's one thing I've always appreciated of Crossroads. There's a lot of serving churches that are out of balance. They're not they're not boldly proclaiming the gospel. You guys are clearly presenting the gospel steadily. I mean, to celebrate that, this Sunday was Baptism Sunday,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think y'all, how many of y'all baptized Sunday?
So we baptized, so this last Sunday, nobody knew it was going to be a baptism Sunday.
Okay.
So we did spontaneous baptisms. We've only done that twice in the 10 years I've been there. But we present the gospel. We do a salvation member and salvation and baptism class. So during the service, they actually, if they want to respond, they go and they meet with some of our elders and leaders that actually still goes through the classwork with them.
Yeah.
And then we have clothes and everything else. But we try to remove every obstacle. But we baptized 36 this last Sunday in a spontaneous baptism service.
And that's great.
It was awesome.
But in the article here, I think it says 700 have been baptized.
Yeah,
Crossroads.
And in the last 10 years.
And so the gospel is going forth. And so anyone who would argue that, you know, the gospel gets lost in service, mm-hmm. that has not been the story. And I love that.
Yeah, well, that's when you disconnect. And you can become a social organization or a civic help organization. Yeah. There's lots of those out there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what we are supposed to be. Our primary responsibility is the gospel.
Yeah. Yeah.
And serving is, we see it all throughout the life of Christ and throughout the apostles and the disciples. It's by serving that gives them the opportunity to the gospel. I think that's where we've missed it as a church, is sometimes we serve and go, I gave a sandwich, I'm done.
Yes.
Mm. And you go, no, man, that sandwich was just the vehicle to get to the gospel.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we can't disconnect those things.
Well, and I think what you see, in what you guys are doing, especially outside, to what Heath was talking about, the opportunity to serve opens up to guys that, men in particular, that, probably never going to, teach a Sunday school class or, things that inside the church are pretty limited to what they do, mm-hmm. and I know we've seen this and experienced this, even in our time, as a church plant, was guys that suddenly everything becomes kingdom valuable, right? I mean, what they love to do, how they can, what they know and how to do outside the walls of the church. Suddenly, you can drive a truck, you can, back a trailer, you can whatever it is. I mean, those things become kingdom valuable.
Yes.
In a way that they've never known. I mean, the first time I shared that with men, we had a big old, I always love to tell a story of Greg, and he was a 6 foot top, forward guy that, 300 pounds that, just had been coming to church and, for 20 years with his wife, but never served in anything. But, I shared, here's what we're going to do. And he comes up weeping afterward going, it wasn't until today that I ever felt like I had anything to offer the church.
Mm.
And, those moments where you go, suddenly I have value, and I think these opportunities, and I think to anybody, watching, pastors in particular, that when we open this up, I mean, it's so valuable to our people. It's not just to get people to come to the church, and
No.
It can't be. That can't be the reason that we do this. It's not a church growth strategy.
No.
It's fulfilling the mission, being good steward over the greatest resource that we have as pastors, and that is our people, and to go, man, you have things in your life that are valuable to the kingdom that we need to tap into, not just the people but things you can do and things you have and resources. And I think, to Heath's point, I just don't know that I've seen so many churches do it as well as y'all do. And I mean, that's just something to celebrate, for your people.
Well, I appreciate that. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I just wanted to say to BMA churches, so many of you could be featured. there is so many of you doing a wonderful job. You're known in your community because you're serving your community. But that's not always the story. You could be 150 years old, have a historical marker out front, and no one in the community may know you're there. They may not know if that church is opened or closed because of the lack of connection and impact.
Well, and that goes to one of the things that you said, one of the keys, and we'll talk a little bit more in the deep dive, is that we have to stop believing the lie that Satan tells that a small church can't have a big impact.
Right.
I think that's such a, I mean, that dude, that is, I mean, if we could get a hold of that, I mean, and just really just believe that, you know, the truth that, yes, we can. It doesn't take, you know, 1,000 people to have a big impact.
It doesn't.
That you can have a big impact. And
I want to highlight for a moment Antioch Baptist Church in Gilmer. This church is I mean, it's buried in the woods. Wonderful, loving congregation that is known in their community.
That's awesome.
And is making a difference. They just came to you guys with a mission trip and served beside you guys this month, and helped you assisted a mission church up and coming and loving on their own community.
Absolutely. The opportunities are there, and I think we just have to be willing to seize those opportunities and to say yes. And I think all the way to circle all the way back around to say, we'll take it, that are willing to say, you know, we'll take it. We'll do that. We'll do the thing that nobody else wants to do, that we'll say yes, even if it's hard. And
the impact in my spirit today is just remembering that that the journey for us is a journey of hardship, suffering, and that we say yes to hard things.
Yeah.
We don't shuck those. We don't avoid those.
Yeah.
That impact happens when we're willing to say yes, to allow God to do things in and through us bigger than us, that He can use to make a difference. And man, the theme here has been benevolence and hospitality and all these things that the scriptures are full of. That are so lacking in our culture.
Yeah.
Man, I've enjoyed it. It's been important for me, just this discussion.
Yeah, same. I mean, you look at Acts chapter 2, and you get to this place where all these people are meeting each other's needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what opens up to what really is the Bible's church growth strategy, which is Acts 2:42. It's they devoted themselves to the apostle teachings, to prayer, the breaking bread, and to fellowship. There's nothing in there about what you would consider to be church growth. At the end of that chapter, though, is that verse we love, and the Lord added to their number. My job is not to have a church growth strategy. My job is to devote myself to caring for people and the apostles' teachings and to prayer and breaking of bread and to fellowship. And if we do those things well, the Lord adds to the number.
Absolutely.
Amen.
And that's a big difference.
That Huge.
Is a big difference. So, well, we're going to continue that conversation. I look forward to, you know, me and you. So anybody want to hear more about that, we'll go a little bit deeper into more specifics of your story and some of your really, I think, two main keys that you had in our deep dive. And so
Sounds good.
I hope everybody will tune in for that. But we're going to move on and talk about the Keller Library real fast. Over on page 7 of Progress, we'd find a little story over there about the Keller Library, our BMA seminary, and their historical library and the things. And it's a pretty amazing place.
It's
I don't know if anybody's ever visited
place.
It, but it's pretty.
Brother Philip Waddell is the librarian there at the BMA Seminary, and man, it is a robust library that holds archives for the BMA. You just wouldn't believe. I mean, the things that just the rooms full of just everything historic in our work. I mean, they're doing that work so well, keeping up with BMA authors and all, but also just a robust seminary library. And yeah, man, they had a celebration just celebrating 60 years of that library. So excited for them.
Absolutely.
The good work that they're doing.
Yeah.
Our WMA just had their annual retreat. Man, they're telling us about that and the progress. They do a ladies retreat every year. This year, I know it was at Gilmer at Rosewood Baptist Church. And man, we work here at the office with multiple ladies who were at that conference. And again, they came back so excited with so many stories. Chris asked them to take pictures. Man, I think they overwhelmed you, didn't they?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so y'all got a couple of pictures, and like 6 made it in here, but I bet they blew up my phone for, it seemed like 30 minutes. It was picture, 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 picture. So. But it's awesome. They looked like they had a good time, for sure.
They did. For the second year in a row, it was both in English and in Spanish. Yeah. And I know over 40 of the Hispanic ladies were attending at the conference. Everything was translated. A highlight I keep hearing about is that I think Cindy Allen and Charlotte Johnson might have been dressed up as Lucy and Ethel in a skit. Apparently, that was something we all need to see.
Lucy.
I think maybe they should do that again. So, yeah.
Yeah, maybe at the state meeting.
Yes, that would be pretty good.
Have an appearance show.
Sure would.
I don't know. That might be good. But the WMA, I'm sorry, it's such a powerful ministry for the BMA. I mean, I know they're giving. I mean, that is the main thing we know them to do. But I mean, they have such a heart for one another and the ladies, and they love on each other. But they raise money every year for so many projects. And I mean, there's a lot of things that happen that really wouldn't happen without the impact of the WMA. And so we just celebrate them, and it's so good to see them all together. And, you know, especially, again, we're seeing so much cooperation between, you know, Spanish missions and ministries and churches and English. And,
yes.
And it's a fun time to be BMA, for sure. And, maybe they'll make an appearance.
Yeah.
You can keep plugging that. See if
yeah,
that
so we're at the pastor's conference. Yeah. There's someone we do that. For
somebody,
sure.
They need to show back up. I'd like to see that. So, all right.
The Chris, I know you've got a workshop coming up. I think you're at the BMA Texas building for our churches.
Yes,
exciting.
Yeah, we've got coming up. I guess it's September 9th. We have Dr. Steve Crawley coming in, and last year at our BMA state meeting, he introduced a discipleship ministry, men's discipleship ministry that he had developed or helped co-author and. The MD5, I think, is what he calls it. But he's going to come and share more of that, how to get that kind of going, what it's about. And I look forward to having them here. I know it's going to be great. But that's on September 9th. It'll be from 10 to 3, and we'll provide lunch. And if anybody wants to come and sign up, you can sign up through the office here.
You know, one of the marks of good discipleship is its natural expansion.
Yeah.
And I am seeing that. I am seeing this discipleship spread to other churches, to other leaders, and I keep hearing about its impact. So I'm excited about that day. I'm excited to learn
the leadership development aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, and calling men into deeper, discipleship, but also how that impacts their call to lead. And
that's great.
I think
that
disciples make disciples.
Absolutely.
There's no definition in the Bible where that is not the case.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. And that's going forward is to really set that is as a prerequisite, that's an expectation. And I think, you know, we could all do better in that. And when we disciple people, and somebody, a friend of mine once said, you know, if you're making a disciple, she's not making a disciple, you're not making a disciple. And
right.
So, I mean, if that's where it really becomes discipleship, is when they take on that, you know, that next generation. And so that should be our goal and expectation for our folks, is that, yes, I want to disciple you, but that means if you're going to enter into that relationship, that you're going to do this as well.
Yep.
Set that goal and expectation. And I think Steve did a great job. I didn't get to sit on a whole lot of it there, so I'm really looking forward to be able to sit through it and to hear more about this. And because I mean, there's a million and one different things out there, but this might be that tool you're looking for. That could help. And I really believe in Steve, and I love him, and I know he'll do a great job. So, but obviously, that, you know, on the calendar is.
Oh yeah,
state meeting,
BMA Texas meeting. Always look forward to that. It's almost that time again. November 17th and 18th at Pathway Baptist Church in Waxahachie. Man, everybody is working on that meeting. Couldn't be more excited about it. It's a big meeting for us. It's the 125th anniversary of the BMA of Texas. And man, in that meeting, we're going to have a special celebration at the Texas Baptist Home for Children with a meal on campus there and all in conjunction with the meeting. And on the second day, man, we're going to have a birthday party. We're going to be really celebrating just the history and the way God has used the BMA of Texas, while we just look to an exciting future and all that God is doing in each of the ministries.
You have a natural love for history, especially the BMA.
Like history.
And so What's some things? I mean, you've been diving deep. I mean, I know every time I call you, you're like you're knee deep in some sort of history book.
Yes, we're really working on some history right now, so that we really can tell the story and celebrate. And I mean, just a lot of exciting things. I mean, the why behind the BMA and the fact that we're so true to that today, and seeing that as alive and ever. Alive as and real as ever in this generation, tongue-tied, man, to know that in that first meeting, just naturally, they put missionaries on the field across Texas into Mexico, and in that, and we're reaching multiple languages, you know, from year one. By year three and four, to see 40 new organized churches. Wow. as a result to realize, so it's also the 125th anniversary of Texas Missions. Yeah. It's also the 125th anniversary of the WMA, because they were organized in that very first meeting. Mm-hmm. And immediately took up missional calls and began to rally and to raise and to help the ministry and missional efforts of the BMA of Texas. And so it's exciting.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be a big meeting, and I hope everybody will be able to come. But we're going to spend really the next, year. I mean, it's our 125th year, and so there will be things going on throughout the year that we're going to kind of highlight. And, even in the progress, we're going to spend some time, focus on. We've looked through some of the old issues of the progress and found some really just interesting stuff. Man. I mean, it's crazy, some of the stuff that's in there.
Hey, Jim, in 1912 is that you can buy land in Cuba, and should, because it would be such a good investment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're like, wow, okay, let's buy some land in Cuba. So,
I want to congratulate Brother Nathan Hartfield. Brother Nathan is the new pastor of First Baptist Church in Crandall. This is his first church to pastor after years in ministry. Mm. We are so excited for you, Brother Brother Nathan. Man, a good guy. It's been a joy to get to know him, and just glad to welcome him to BMF Texas family.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember that first year, man.
So. Oh, yeah. And Crandall's booming, so that's a great place to have somebody plant a place there.
Yeah. He's got a really, really cool story, too.
He does.
I'm looking forward to getting to know him a lot better, and really just, him getting to know everybody, and I think he's going to be a great, great addition. But they're on the page, they're in page 10. I just want to take a minute and just, one, there's a list of the local association meetings, and so it's that time of year. October will be that, and so September, October will. There are dates in there for all the local associations and when they meet, and so you can take a look at that there. But on the bottom, I just wanted to, as the new editor of the Progress, just thank people for their contribution to the Progress. There was a special anniversary offering, and the lists of those churches are on there, and I just appreciate that gift. Because, we have moved under the umbrella of the missions office, we're still working on our own budget and trying to be healthy and be good stewards over this, because it is such an important ministry for the BMA, and disseminating information, disseminating things, the things that are going on, and celebrating, and even equipping and training some of those things. But but I think, to keep that ministry going, we're going to be rolling out some new church plans. And, I'm hoping that we'll get more churches on board. There's more of a digital presence. We're working on improving that as well. The paper is always cool, but, doesn't always scroll well. And so we're working on getting a really usable format for digital, because if you can pull it up on your phone, you're more likely to read it. And so we're working really hard to get that out. And the podcast, really just kind of, just having conversations about, just being excited about what God is doing in the BMA and the churches of the BMA and churches like Crossroads, the missions office, just I get to be a part of all that. It's pretty awesome, man, that we get to do that. And I'm thankful for the BMA. And so
would you allow me to say something about the local association meetings?
Sure, go for it.
I just would want to remind everyone that they're open. Each of those are open. So if your church is isolated and outside of local fellowship, if you're not rubbing shoulders and don't know other local churches, realize that they're all open, that they would love to have you come and check out maybe a neighboring association. Yeah. If you're frustrated because yours isn't meeting or whatever, I just want to remind you that they are open. Yeah. Isolation is so dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, we need to be rubbing shoulders with other churches.
Yeah.
And so look over this list and take advantage of that if your church is one of those that's not locally connected within the BMA.
That's good. So important. Yeah. So important. And then I guess the last thing, man, we want to highlight, you know, have everybody, if you get a paper, to take a look back on page 11, and that is our picture page. It's something new to the progress, and just, you know, this particular issue was all about missions, local missions in particular. How are you serving? And
it's awesome.
You know, reaching out into your community. And so we just got some churches that you know, sent in some pictures, and yeah, just cool to see people. I just feel like when we started this was, you know, it's good to see.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, to see one another, to see what everybody's doing. But plus, it's kind of cool to see yourself in the paper, man. I remember as a kid, that was the highlight, boy.
Yeah,
if you made the paper, man, that was like, oh, mama cut it out, and you know, just put
so
it on
many,
the wall.
So many kids in ministry here, and then I'm looking over this, man. There's Chris Sweet in the bottom corner,
yep.
And the San Angelo ministry team.
Yeah.
This is that group, man, that's keeping the food line alive down at San Angelo.
I would point out in the top left up there, there is you know, Mike Watt, the wrestlers, man.
There's the wrestlers.
Yeah, they actually came to us, you know, when Antioch was with us. There, and we're planting Oasis in Leveland, and they came out, you know, at Crosswork, and you know, his ministry team, his wrestlers came out, and he's actually got his son over his head. Mm. That is his son, his first wrestling match with him, and he took his son, took him up over his head, and body slammed him, and it was.
I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
I know your son that would be a good idea. If I don't advise it.
Yeah, no, I would do it to my kids. I would. My boys need it. I tell you what, they need a good body slam.
Hey, look, so. Frank Escamilla there from First Baptist Blooming Grove, and a group of kiddos. Man, I can promise you that if Brother Frank is standing there with a group of kids, the gospel's being shared in that
There's
moment.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
There is no doubt. I love Brother Frank. So
I do too.
Well, cool, man. Well, any last thoughts before we sign off?
I'm good, man. Thanks for letting me be a part of this, and excited for. Man, where things are headed. It's good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it, man. Thanks for being here. Heath, anything?
No, I've enjoyed the conversation today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Been blessed and edified by it.
Absolutely. Me as well. Challenged as well. So looking forward to our deep dive. And man, with that, we're just going to say God bless you guys. And we love y'all. It's great to be part of BMA.
Lord willing, see you next month.